come and make a presentation to us. It has been made, fortunately, the presentation was made last time, and we are glad to have the Deputy Minister in our midst, who's leading the delegation for the Department of Social Development. And Deputy Minister, the committee has agreed that last time the department was offered an opportunity at length to make its presentation to this committee on the annual report, its finances, and everything else that we have requested from the department. So at this stage, I think I will allow the members, they indicated that they are ready to interact with the department. I will allow the members to start with their interaction with the department. So we won't... the department will, when it's making its own responses, it will be able to say anything they want to say to the committee. And committee members, over to you. We won't make any introductions. We made them last time, and we know the deputy ministers, and we know everybody else. Members, over to you. Who wants to shoot first? Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Much as we came back to apologize last time, I think we should again profusely apologize to the Select Committee for what happened and promise that it will never happen. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, for the apology. We did receive a written apology from your office, and we really appreciate it as the committee, and we are looking forward in working with you in a healthy manner. Thanks. Honorable De Villiers, first on the line. Yes. Straight to the question. You want to make a preamble? You can. You are the first speaker.
That's it. Okay. All right. The stormy waters are clear, and there's no problem between this select committee and the department. And I think that in future there will be a very nice and workable situation between the committee and the department. Thank you very much for your deliberations on the matter last time. And I hope that in future, coming next year, there will be a very open response between the select committee and also the department. Then my question to the department, Honorable Chairperson, the one is about SASSA aim to verify 70% of SOPBIN data for prioritized grant types, that is CSG, DG, and OAG. What percentage of SOPBIN data was verified? That is the one question. The other one, in terms of enterprise architecture, IGAP was rolled out in one region instead of four. Why is that the case? And the third one, there is no reporting on the implementation of registry module, implementation of the workflow for grant administration, and development of a record management solution for bulk scanning. Why is that the case, and what has SASSA done thus far in terms of these aspects? I thank you.
Honorable, okay, let's go this way. Honorable Mashamaita, Honorable Mule.
Honorable thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thanks, the Deputy Minister, for coming and interact with the committee. Honorable Chair, my question is in relation with the Social Development Information Management System. It has been reported in the annual report that the department under stakeholder management and donor coordination met with various donors, such as the National Treasury, United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, Japanese Technical Cooperation Scheme, and Trilogue, but it deviated from its target of impact analysis on official development assistance by 90%. Can the department explain how and why it has deviated from its target? On information management system, it is also reported by the end of the financial year, 7 provinces were implementing the social development information management system. Can we be given the names of those provinces and what has been the hold up with regards to information in the other 2 provinces? What is the department doing to ensure that all provinces have the system in place? Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Deputy Minister. My first question will be, in which provinces has the implementation strategy for the policy on disabilities been piloted? And how did the department choose the pilot site? The second one is, how far is the department in compiling statistics on or registering abuse of elders? The last one is, how many children are benefiting from alternative care according to the department statistics? And how is this form of care rolled out in different provinces? Thank you.
Honorable Plati, Honorable Mahate, Honorable Mushudi, Faba, and Ranto on that sequence.
thank you very much, Chairperson. I've got just about a few questions here. One is on the old age grant. What I want to find out, Chairperson, is the qualifying criteria. I know it's an old age grant. I just want to find out the qualifying criteria. I'm asking this question specifically on the basis of two scenarios that I have, where there are 2 old women, one is 68 years, the other one is 70 years. They are actually not qualifying to get the old age grant on the basis of their spouse income. I wanted to check how does that work and all those things, so that we must have an understanding. They are staying in a farm area in Klerksdorp, and this is their frustration, and I wanted to find out from the minister. And the second question is, what does this 356 pools fit additional to establishment fair to in your what is that annual report? Are these pools a contracted base employee, or on which job level are these 356 employees placed? Are they or categorized? And how does SASA aim to fast track recruitment for critical posts? And maybe check this in my last question also on SASA. What are strategies that SASA have in mind to retain critical skills or critical or employees? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question would be, when will the integrated foster care management framework be piloted? And maybe just to check in which areas or settings. And the second question would be, what are the reasons for overspending on social relief of distress? And my last question would be, Deputy Minister, the last time when you answered the questions in the MCOP, you indicated the requirements for SASA, you know, like the offices where they pay out the grants, that one of the requirements is that the area should have toilets, you know, it should be conducive. But what I want to check is your monitoring mechanism. If I have to give a practical example of what is happening in Klerksdorp, the offices of SASSA, when you go there, it's frustrating to see long queues right in town. You ask yourself about the safety of those people. There are no trailers. They are standing there. Maybe like you indicated clearly that these are the requirements, but when one goes to the ground, like I'm talking about Klerksdorp, that it doesn't happen. So if you can check, how do you monitor that these people comply with the set standards, I think.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, my question is based on program number 4, under communication and marketing. I just want to check with what time frame does SASSA have in mind in terms of developing and implementing the stakeholder management strategy, and what prevents SASSA from achieving this target previously? What strategy has been put in place to prevent non-delivery in the new year? My second question, Chair, is based on program number 5, corporate and services. Why has SASSA failed to develop and implement a chance management strategy? 15.5% instead of 40% of district and local offices facilities were produced. Why is that the case? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. To the department, thanks for your presentation the week before. I'd just like to know, if you look at Program 3, there's two questions. The one is on the Program 3, where we're talking about adoption. You know, if we look at the 8 orphans that we've got in our country, it is going to become a bigger and a bigger problem. Usually the grandmas and the uncles and the aunts look after these children. But the problem that we are encountering at the moment is that these old people are also dying. And we're not having anyone to look after these children. And I've been at a workshop, private workshop, about the HIV kids. And the one thing that was our alternative solution was to look at adoptions. You can look at all these alternative cares and houses for the children, but eventually it all comes about to adoption to make it a cost-effective exercise. And I would like to know if the department got something in place, for instance, where one can somehow subsidize, number one, make it easier for adoptions, because it usually takes a long term to actually adopt a child. You don't want a child with blue eyes and white hair. A child is a child. But it mustn't be a long process. It must be a process with actually not a schlepper person to be able to adopt a child. And for me, I would like to know, is there a new system in place, or are you looking at a system where people can actually afford, people especially that can't have children, to adopt a child? Because I think that is, at the end of the day, the way we can give a child a good home. That's the one question. And then the other one on the Auditor General's report. I'll quickly check. I had it there now. The controls in respect of food vouchers and aid purchases to be distributed were not implemented. What system are the department going to put in place, as we find that there's a lot of fraud and corruption taking place, specifically with these food vouchers and these grants? I always look at the auditor report, because the auditor is an independent report. It's not a report from one side to the other. And I would like to know, what systems do the department, or what are they going to put in place to see to it that next year we don't sit with the same situation? Thank you, Madam Chief.
Okay, next. Good morning, Chairperson and the Deputy Minister and the delegation. My first question is there no strategy that can be done to shorten these long queues where the people are standing for a long time? Recently, there's an old lady who has died in one of these provinces in the queues. Also, as much as the queues are in the are on the pay points, even in the banks. They don't have a place to sit. They will stand there in the queue together with the other people who are doing their business. Can't the department talk to the bank for a separate place made for those old people? My second question is on is this, what are the results of the various poverty alleviation projects conducted in poor communities in South Africa? Does the department have plans to increase the number of beneficiaries of these projects? If so, how?
Can I just make a follow up on the question that on that document?
Okay. Thanks, on our chairperson. In my follow up is there any advocacy mechanism that the department is having in relation to the adoption of children? For instance, parents are dying of different diseases, and we have the aunts, the uncles, sisters staying with them in a Ubuntu. You can't leave your sister's child or your uncle's child alone, but you take them along. And because in the rural areas, townships, and former disadvantaged communities, we don't have the culture of adopting your own relatives. And you find that when there is inheritance or housing inheritance and all those things, those children loses out because of there was no formal adoption. I have a case at hand of my uncle's children, Mube, where their father died. They were part of the permit, house permit. They had a stepmother who got married to their father within a year of the death of their mother. And they grew up knowing this mother. But when the mother died, we were then asked where was the formal adoption. And there was nothing. The house and everything went back to the relative of the stepmother. So do we have any advocates? I know, even now, that we don't know about that, that we need to formally adopt. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Honorable Mshani.
Thanks, Honorable President. In Program 2 of the department, is talking about a comprehensive social security, which have to deal with ability, older people's benefits, and so forth. But, Chairperson, what is surprising is the officials of the department, and Deputy Minister, you must talk to that point. The officials of the department, which was picked by Auditor General, critical documents for the application of the grant was not complete. But we talk of a comprehensive social security as officials. What has been done with the officials who failed to fill, you know, this application for grants in a correct way so that person can be able to get his grant or her grant? And then distribution of relief aid was not performed in a standardized and or consistent manner in all provinces. Then a question arises in terms of the competency of officials who have to perform these duties. the systems that we have put in place, whether there are correct systems and so forth. Because, Honorable Chair, if an official is not doing his or her work, action must be taken against that official. There shouldn't be no excuse. I cannot be happy to read from the report of the department to say a comprehensive plan or a strategic task team on the social assistance grant debtors has been established. In our 15 years of governance, we still establish, you know, task teams. You know, I think the department must clarify us about the systems and the capacity of officials to do this work. Because really, I'm very much surprised if a form, just to an official, fails to fill a form for a needy person to can be able to get that grant. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thanks very much. Any other members? Yeah, members, you are free to grab something to tea and some snacks. Okay, I will allow 5 minutes after my member moves so that you can grab something and come back to the meeting.
Thanks, Chairperson. The other question is what lessons can be taken from the pilot program conducted by the department in 6 correctional services for children awaiting trial? And when does the department envisage rolling out the program in other correctional facilities for children awaiting trial? Yesterday I was reading an article of, is it today or yesterday? I don't know. But these 14-year-old boys who can raise a 13-year-old somewhere in Gauteng is ranked. And fortunately, they took photos and sent it over to other learners. And fortunately for this girl, those boys are still in custody. However, because they are 14-year-olds and the law does not allow them to remain in custody, people will raise, they will learn other extreme measures of being autism, whatever it is. I'm just making an example of the case, the current case, in terms of the law is very much lenient on them. And also with the syndicate, also they send the under 16 to do drugs and all those things. So I'm just making an example. Thank you.
Okay. Members, just a few questions from my side. Ranto, did I allow you?
Yes.
Okay. I'm scared of your look. The way you look at me. Okay. Deputy Minister, on Program 3, there's a reference to the protocols and guidelines for foster care that were developed. What you would like to know as a committee is how far is the implementation of these guidelines on alternative care? And also the still on Program 3, services to families, where it talks about the conducted training for probation officers on the following number of standards, your report writing and customer care. How far is this program? Is it yielding any expected results, the program? And the last one is on poverty eradication. Poverty eradication is one of government's and the department's critical areas. And further, it is an imperative to protect the rights of children and other vulnerable groups. As far as social security is concerned, when will the care dependency grant implementation plan be finalized by the department?
And also what I would like also to find out from the department, whether there are any priority programs that have been identified previously by the department as far as poverty eradication is concerned. Okay. Member Buroto?
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. Already I had said she is the last, but I think when we go for tea, at least we shall left all the questions.
Okay.
And apologize for coming late. I had already apologized. We had another meeting. The department has established an independent tribunal for social assistance appeals. That is on Program 5, Strategy and Governance. Now, has the department or this the independent tribunal for social assistance appeals experienced any challenges in addressing appeals that have been lodged with the minister? And if that is the case, what type of challenges? And what is the department or the tribunal doing to ensure that more appeals are considered and finalized? That's the question I wanted to ask.
Deputy Minister, we can just break for 5 minutes. And members will come back quickly. Grab tea and come back into the meeting before you can respond. Marcel, can you call everybody in?
Who's the lady? The advisor? I'm sorry, I'm going to go and watch this lean. What is it? I know, man.
Honorable Grunewald, can you sit down, please? Find a seat.
No, I'm not part of this meeting.
We are in a meeting now.
Do you listen to them?
Yes.
Okay, can we take this opportunity to hand over to the department to make responses on the questions asked?
Madam Chair, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Perhaps I should make this preliminary comment that the Department of Social Development has two agencies associated with it. One is the National Development Agency, and the other is the South African Social Security Agency, both of which are established in terms of Schedule 3A of the Public Finance Management Act. And in terms of that dispensation, these agencies have got accounting officers of their own, they have programs of their own, they write annual reports of their own based on their own plans. Over which the Department of Social Development exercises oversight. I make this point, Madam Chair, because there's a considerable number of questions which have been posed which relate specifically to SASA, which is a Schedule 3A entity which should be able to interact with this committee on its own accord, to deal with questions relating to the capacity of staff, relating to the percentage of data verified by SASA, and a whole range of questions that have been raised by SASA relating to the filling of critical posts and so on. Whilst we, at the National Department, remain responsible for policy, the administration belongs with SASA, and questions that have been posed do not relate directly to matters of policy, insofar as SASA is concerned, but relate to the administration, which is what SASA should be able to interact with the community, with this committee directly on. There are some questions which have been posed relating to social security. We will be able to field those questions insofar as they deal with matters of policy. That we should be able to deal with. If you permit, Madam Chair, I would like to invite my colleagues who work in specific areas of responsibility relating to the questions that have been posed to first interact with those, and then I will, for want of a better expression, in a manner of speaking, mop up whatever may have been left out, and the Deputy Minister will then make a concluding remark, if that's okay with you.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Members.
Good morning.
There was a question that was raised with regard to what are the results of various privatization projects. Does the department have a plan to increase the projects and how? With regard to the privatization projects, as a department, we have realized that we have been able to make serious efforts in terms of addressing poverty and hunger that the majority of our citizens are facing. But we have realized also that what is lacking with regard to those projects is the sustainability part of it. And as a department, we have now moved towards a sustainable livelihood approach where we focus in terms of the assets that are residing within communities to ensure that those projects that communities do establish or develop are sustainable. But also through this sustainable livelihood approach, we also do our best in terms of linking them with opportunities. For instance, if we identify that this community has got some kind of assets, we then look in terms of market opportunities in which they can be able to market their products and ensure that there is sustainability. That sustainability will be in terms of job opportunities that will be able to last for a long period of time. So our approach to poverty alleviation now is of ensuring that we ensure sustainability of interventions. In that way, we are also trying to ensure that the work that has been done initially in terms of poverty alleviation projects is also taken to a higher level in terms of ensuring that we encourage community members to take ownership of their programs. Also, what we have done as part of that is to ensure that we encourage communities to form social development cooperatives, wherein we encourage them in terms of saying, these are the assets that you have in the community. How can you organize yourself as communities and work together to market your products in a way that it will ensure that you have a sustainable livelihood? We have already started as a department to pilot some of these initiatives, and they have really proved to work very well. Recently, as a department, we have been able to link vulnerable communities with hemp projects in which poor communities are able to produce agricultural products that will then go and be processed and result into some kind of products or refined products like clothing. So in that way, we're able to sustain the livelihood of communities. Also, there was a question that was raised with regard to what kind of programs are we as a department going to implement to address issues of poverty eradication, or what kind of programs are we implementing. Currently, we're implementing programs such as Masupatila Youth Pioneer Programs, which is intended to address poverty challenges that are facing the youth by really giving them capacity in terms of skills as well as employment opportunities. What this program does is we recruit youth pioneers. We train them in terms of life skills as well as in terms of having the spirit of really willing to get to be committed in terms of addressing the poverty challenges of the country. When they exit, we link them to further education, where they're able to identify areas of interest where they can further their qualifications. But also those who want to go into work environment, we then link them to work opportunities that are available. Currently, we've got 1,500 Masupatila Youth Pioneers throughout the country. And in that way, we have been able to address challenges that are faced by youth in terms of employment, but also we are skilling them in terms of being able to survive on themselves after the program. And also, if they want to further their education, we are able to provide that assistance. I've also made mention of the sustainable livelihood programs, in which we have a number of programs that we've now started with communities. Through these programs, we encourage communities to rise and take ownership of whatever development initiatives that are within their communities. So the approach itself seeks to encourage community members to really look at livelihood opportunities within their communities as well as households. And thereafter, we're able to say, these are the kind of challenges that you're facing as a community. And these are the opportunities that you can take as a community. And we take them through that process of working out those opportunities until they're able to bring results in terms of improvement of the quality of life. So that is one area that we are also working on. We also have got national youth service programs, which are intended to ensure that the youth are mobilized to provide community services within communities, and in that way they are able to get stipend as a means of sustainability. Also, this program is also intended to address issues of lack of employment, in the sense that we give them necessary skills that can also make them to be employable also outside the department. And also we also participate in the expanded public works programs, which I think my colleague will really be able to elaborate.
Perhaps what will assist in dealing with this question of poverty is to try and give a more comprehensive response. You may be aware that the government at this point has quite advanced in the development of what is called an anti-poverty strategy, and that whilst the strategy is being finalized, which is now being consulted on with civil society organizations and other social partners, that in the interim we've had what is called interim anti-poverty interventions, sometimes called the War on Poverty campaign. And the Department of Social Development is part of that overall effort by government to tackle issues of poverty. Perhaps in due course we will interact with the committee on the strategy itself and the role of social development in that. But I thought I should mention the fact that government's biggest poverty alleviation measure today is our social assistance program, which commands no less than, in the year under review, no less than 76 billion rand. And Mr. Chihoma will be able to give us a rundown. In fact, there is already in the presentation that's been given the extent of coverage and the numbers of people we're talking about and the different crime types. What we're talking about, Mr. Mlauzi is talking about community-based initiatives. We should not be looked at in isolation. From this big poverty alleviation measure by government through cash transfers to households. Doc, you might want to add something in relation to that.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable member. I just want to have the hand over there. Member Chibulia.
I don't want to deviate from the discussion now, but in the third instance on the answer got from the DG about SASSA, I understand that SASSA do have their own accounting officer. Mm-hmm. But the question here arises from the document of the social development. Mm-hmm. So if SASSA can only answer those questions around mm-hmm. that situation, mm-hmm. then my understanding is that SASSA must also be present here in this standing committee so that they can answer our questions.
opposed to the department. Now, and the other understanding of myself is SAFA is not a department on its own, but SAFA is linked to the Department of Social Development. And that is my problem now with the answer which I got now this morning from the DG. What is the situation around that?
Member Mr. May.
Chair. Thanks. I had noted what the DG was responding. Maybe I was going to make a follow-up on the second round of questions, but now that Ms. Peter says, raised it, I must make a follow-up. DG. Maybe you must explain to this committee as to whether the department, SASA is not accountable to the department. Because my understanding is SASA got money from the Department of Social Services. And in terms of the PFMA, the PFMA says to the department, when you give funds to an entity, you must convince yourself that this entity will be able to account for the funds you are given to that entity. And the issue of policy making at the department, yes, we make policies, but the administration of entities must work in line with what is contained in the policy. I don't think we must separate to say the administration of an entity which we give money must work with their own there, and then now we regular policy. I can't take that. They are accountable to the department, and if the administration is not in order, the department must call the CEO of the entity to come and account to your office. I don't think, DG, your response is looking at it, which is not. Thank you.
Member Mahat.
Thank you, Chairperson. Like other members, I must indicate that I'm a little bit different with the answer of DG. That is why, before I raise my question, I referred the Deputy Minister to the answer that he gave us in the NCOP when he was responding to the questions under social development. The questions were about monitoring. How do we understand that SASA is an entity? But you can't just say, SASA, you are there on your own. So as the department, that is why the minister even gave the requirement that as the department, these are the requirements that we expect that our officers, whoever they start a contract, these are the requirements that they should meet. But when you go to the ground, the requirements are not as expected. Like I gave the example, a practical example of what is happening in the sector. Then the simple question is, how do you monitor? If you have given somebody a responsibility, how do we ensure that that person account or comply with the requirements? Really, this thing that SASA should be, we understand that SASA has got his own accounting officers, but we're here at social development. And thank you.
Over to you.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm the last person to want to cross swords with the committee of the NCOP. But perhaps what will help us in the future is that when we get an invitation of this kind, we should bring SASA and the NDA with us. This time around, we've been invited on our own. Perhaps in the future we should be advised that the total portfolio of social development, inclusive of the agencies, will be entertained for discussion. as a matter of law, social development does not allocate money to SASSA. Money is appropriated by Parliament, specifically for SASSA. In a sense, SASSA is not funded like NGOs that we allocate money to and they account to us on how they spend that money. SASSA accounts to Parliament in its own right, which is why it has an annual report of its own, which the committee is free to interact with. Having said that, it doesn't mean that, in fact, I was not answering when I made the preliminary comments. We will interact with matters relating to social security. All I was alerting the committee to is the fact that there are aspects of detail on the administration which SASSA is well placed to deal with. For an example, the Department of Social Development will not be in a position to say what is it that SASSA is doing to fill critical posts, because I think that is a question for the CEO of SASSA to deal with. I'm just giving you that as an example, and we will deal with some of those questions. But insofar as there are questions relating to policy, there are questions asked about the old age grant, how does it work, those questions I'm sure we will be able to deal with. Questions relating to social relief of distress, there are specific questions raised on that. We'll be able to deal with those. Because they straddle both policy and administration, those we'll be able to deal with. And I hope the committee doesn't feel offended when I say that some of the detail would be best tackled by SASSA. I'm not saying that the committee is not entitled to ask those questions or to get answers. What I'm saying is that there are matters of detail which the department would not be able to deal with satisfactorily. And that doesn't mean that the department is derelict of its duty. It wouldn't mean that. So I hope I have not been misunderstood to mean that we are not going to interact with the committee on these questions. All I'm saying is that there are aspects of detail that the department is not well placed to deal with. But in the future, when we are invited on occasions such as this, we will make sure that SASSA and the NDA are here with us, so that if there are questions relating to the practical administration that they are engaged with on a daily basis, that they are able to do so. And I'm hoping, Madam Chair, that the committee has scheduled interactions of this kind already with SASSA on its own annual report, because some of the questions that have been raised relates directly to what is in the annual report of SASSA, which gives more detail on the administration. But we will answer the question to the best of our ability based on the information we can gather from our oversight responsibility over the work of SASSA.
We'll
come to those questions.
Yeah, thank you very much, DG. We welcome your explanation on the questions that have been posed by members. And I think the explanation that you have given suffices, and it's well received by us, and the committee is not fighting at all. We will never fight with you. You are one of the departments that, the members, when they speak, they speak. Oh.
Yeah, it was informed that
it is now. Okay. Okay, member. I'm still on the floor here. Your explanation is well received, Honorable DG. We will definitely interact with the SASSA. It's already in our program. SASSA, NDA, and other agencies that are linked to the department will meet with them next year so that we can have the same interaction that we're having with the department. Thanks very much. And over to your team. Ma'am, you were on the floor. I'm sorry for that interjection.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Members. I just want to add on the other poverty eradication programs that we have in the department, specifically on the Expanded Public Works program. We have two programs in the department, the Home Community-Based Care and the Early Childhood Development, which relates to skill development and learnership for those two programs, and a stipend as well that is also given to this caregivers at community level. This particular CADAS also receive accredited training, and the idea being that we should actually exit this CADAS to other levels so that they don't stick to this level for the rest of their lives. So there is a program to exit, an exit strategy for this CADAS, that they can become other higher level CADAS to do child and youth care work, community development worker, community health workers, auxiliary workers, and auxiliary social workers as well. And of course, this CADAS can even go further to get the priority preference when identify learners for, say, social work or nursing or whatever, post-FET college learnerships that they could have at those levels. So this is one of the areas for poverty alleviation.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. I'll deal with some of the questions related to comprehensive social security. But I think maybe, Chair, I should preface, and I'm sorry, I'm sure the committee has dealt with the issue, but I think maybe an outstanding part relating to SASSA, we may need to explain. As the Director General has indicated, we're not trying to abdicate our responsibility, but in terms of the model of separation of policy and delivery, SASSA still has to account to the department in respect of specific issues in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. It has to make sure that it's submitted. It also has to ensure that it gives the department the monthly expenditure report. And on top of that, we are not oblivious to the service delivery challenges experience. We have over the last 2 years had a team out there monitoring services at pay points, offices, documents, and a report in that respect will be made, become available soon. It's just that, as the DJ has indicated, our focus is a lot more on the policy and its impact. Again, I do attempt to answer some of them, I'm a bit worried that it would be at the level of generality, so it would perhaps be best to speak to SASSA in respect of the verification of data, why IGAP was only rolled out in one province, and non-implementation of the change management. Coming to a specific issue of data and the department, there was a question relating to SDIMS, or the Social Development Information System. This system has been rolled out in 7 provinces, as the member has indicated, but it has not been rolled out in Northwest and Gauteng. In the case of Gauteng, they chose to use the SAP platform and system for their welfare information. I should perhaps indicate also that given the fact that provinces remain free to make service delivery choices at the time when the department came up with the Social Development Information Management Strategy, already in 2 provinces they were rolled out, such as Gauteng and the Eastern Cape. The department, national department, therefore assisted the remainder of the province. The other province, Northwest, I am informed that good progress has been made in rolling out the system there, but in part it was delayed because the province, having the right to make a choice, considered first whether it should be the Eastern Cape system or the Gauteng system or the national department's system. Coming to the issue of the qualifying criteria, they are in the main, other than the normal administrative documentary requirements, they are in the main 3 other eligibility criteria. One relates to the age, and members would know certainly that we are in the process of equalizing the age of eligibility between men and women. The other eligibility requirement is the income, and then thirdly, assets. In respect of the assets, just to give this very specifics, where the income of a person, a single person, exceeds 2,426 per month, that person will not qualify for the benefit. At an annual level, it amounts to 29,112. Now, the whole idea of a means test is to make sure that we target the poorest of the poor. Therefore, when there is income from one of the members in the relationship, or in this case the spouse, that income is considered to be joint income, and therefore the formula will divide the income. And therefore, in the case of a spousal relationship, the income means test threshold for the group year is 58,224 per annum. That amounts to an income of 4,852. So if the remaining spouse is in employment, that income is considered to be joint income, it's half, and if it then exceeds the income that would be applicable in the event of a single person, the member doesn't qualify for the grant. Have I confused the members sufficiently, Chair? What I will do through Lana, I'll give a single page in which we it has well laid out the status, single or otherwise, the eligible or the means test threshold for singles and for couples, and then the last test, which is the assets test. If an individual applying for a grant has an additional house or building that he or she owns, then the value of that asset is also taken into account. In respect of social leave of distress, I am sure I will be supported by the acting CFO, but essentially during the course of the beginning of last year, government set up a task team when there was this escalation of food prices. At the beginning of the year already, and it was just in the new financial year, there already were indications that as a result of the rising cost of basic foodstuffs, the government was going to intervene. So in addition to the already 100 and I think roughly 34,000 rand budgeted, an additional 500,000 was allocated during the adjustment budget, which was in October. That left us with 634,000 rand, or rather million rand, my apology. I think the fact that South Africans became aware that over and above the fact that government was providing the basic social grants for which many of them did not qualify, and that now under the social relief of distress provisions, there was going to be additional income support, it did lead to an increase of the number of applications to the extent that the budget, the additional budget was not sufficient, and it resulted in overspending. We would argue, given that we've got high levels of unemployment, high levels of poverty, that were there more money in social relief of distress, we're sure that it would be depleted before the end of each financial year, and it is happening in this financial year already. So going forward, we can expect continued pressure to be placed on the budget of the social relief of distress program. On the corruption food vouchers, not only just food vouchers but food parcels, yes, the Office of the Auditor General has done an intensive investigation into it and has made several recommendations. Part of the recommendation is that we should look at standardization. Now, the non-standardization is the result in part of history, where a province like the Northwest in the past has always relied on food parcels, a province like the Western Cape in part on food parcels and cash, etc., etc. An outcome of the report of the Auditor General was that we would begin to standardize arrangements, and for this year already there's a decision that we should revert less and less to food parcels
other than the storage problems and inefficiency, it has turned out that people quite often exchange the food parcel for cash. In any case, in the event of cash, it is, given our current systems of payment through the payment contractors, it is quite costly to distribute a 2 or 3 months of payment. And the department through SASSA has taken a deliberate decision to try and focus on vouchers for this year. But even then, vouchers too present problems. So going forward, a study will be undertaken into the more optimal way of dealing with social relief of distress, because the payment could be once off or two or three times, etc., and we hope to have such a study available. But for the current arrangement, SASSA will focus on trying to deal mainly with vouchers. I could perhaps speak to the issue of the strategy on long queues. I think it is probably one of the most challenging areas, given cost arrangements in South Africa, given the extent of rural, and it's a, I guess it's an ugly word, rurality, the extent to which many people live in rural areas where they do not have access to the formal financial system. And so we've been looking at a more optimal payment system. But if we use both a combination of the private contractors, the South African Post Office, and banks all together in one system, we probably have a more optimal system, but how to negotiate it is a challenge and is a priority of Minister Molewa. She has instructed SASSA to develop a strategy. This strategy, the last time that I was engaged in it, was submitted to be discussed with Cabinet. And once that strategy is agreed upon, we should see, over time, a better arrangement. More immediate steps, yes, is better staggering of people going to banks. In fact, during the course of the last 2 years, SASSA has deliberately moved people to post offices and banks. And what we've done is we've actually shifted the problem from payment queues to the banks. Now we're in discussion through SASSA with banks to stagger payments, but also to make the special provisions for the elderly and disabled members, as was indicated earlier. But I think we would be creating perhaps expectations that we'll never be able to meet if we try to say that this problem is going to be dealt with speedily. It is one of those nagging issues where the more you roll out payment systems and the more the financial institutions such as banks, in terms of the financial sector charter, roll out ATMs and banks in areas, the more the number of beneficiaries grow. So it is a moving target. On comprehensive social security, I mean, the Honourable Member asked the question in the context of the incomplete information provided in documents. I think we need to make a distinction between what is meant by a system of comprehensive social security and the comprehensiveness of the administration. I guess on the latter score, yes, the administration leaves much to be desired, which is why the IGAP system was rolled out by SASSA, and again they will come and speak to it, where the taking down of information is automated, officials will not be able to fully process a document unless all information is provided. Again, they've only done one pilot. It looks promising. It has proved that we can process an application within 45 minutes. Again, but it's going to take additional capacity to move through it. In the context of a comprehensive social security system, we are talking about three pillars. One is that when people are poor, they should receive social assistance if they are unemployed and vulnerable. Secondly, where they are employed, they should contribute to social insurance so that in the event of them falling into poverty as a result of a loss of job or injury at work or disability or old age, that they then should be able to draw on their savings. From a point of view of
again, comprehensiveness. And in the third instance of third pillar, people should also learn to save for these contingencies in life. I have dealt with the issue of the standardization of social relief. The chair asked some difficult questions in respect of some social security issues and care dependency. Thank you, DJ. We have completed, during the course of last year, we undertook pilots of a new, what is called, assessment tool for care dependency, so that we rely less and less on subjective opinions of medical practitioners, especially doctors. Unfortunately, the pilot has taken longer than we had anticipated. We had some challenges with the team that went out into the field and the quality of the report. Hence, towards the end of the financial year, they could only give us the report on the pilot and not the implementation plan. We will, before the end of this financial year, complete that implementation plan so that we look towards applying or using a new application tool for care dependency during the course of next year. I wonder whether the DJ will answer the question on the tribunals. The last question there was, why the task team? I share the concern with the honourable member. I think when decisions are made by individuals, it takes much quicker than task teams and committees. But I'm sure the member will also understand that one gets better buy-in and facilitates better implementation. And in the respect of comprehensive social security, which runs across five different departments, has significant implications. The government decided on a task team to ensure that there is coherence in the development and formulation of such policies. Thank you, Chair.
Let me deal with the questions relating to the independent tribunal. The program manager responsible for that is unfortunately not here today. In terms of the Social Assistance Act, perhaps let me give a historical perspective. Before 2006, when SASA became operational, the social assistance function was a provincial function. And people who were unhappy about the outcome of their applications for social assistance appealed to the MEC. When that function was shifted nationally, it meant that all applicants of social grants who were unhappy about the decision of SASA now from April 1st of 2006 would appeal to the minister. Now, the numbers of people we're talking about are quite great. And in fact, there was already a backlog in the provinces prior to the function being shifted. When we realized that it was not practicable for the minister to entertain the numbers of appeals that were coming from unhappy applicants for social assistance, it was decided then that instead of asking the minister to deal with these appeals, that we should set up an independent tribunal. And to this end, there was an amendment brought into Parliament to the Social Assistance Act to provide for the establishment of an independent tribunal. The independent tribunal is still in its formative stages, in that we don't as yet have a fully capacitated unit. The backlog when this process started was standing in the region of about 45,000 cases of appeals. But these cases varied. The bulk of them related to disability grants, and this would essentially be people who are unhappy about how they have been assessed by doctors, or alternatively, how officials of SASA have interpreted the medical reports of the medical officers that have attended to them for purposes of their applications for disability grant in the main. But you also have a category of cases where people are appealing on the grounds purely that they are poor and unable to provide for their dependents, which is not an eligibility criteria for social assistance. So we have a bulk of those kinds of cases, but we also have a set of cases dealing specifically with disability. Now, we have set up an independent tribunal which consists of a panel of independent practitioners chaired by lawyers who are independent practitioners. They involve doctors who are also independent practitioners and eminent people from society who sit there to bring a community perspective. The budget that was allocated originally for this function started at 10 million and it grew over the MTEF. But what has become clear is that the budget allocated by Treasury for this purpose is far outstripped by the numbers of appeals that we are getting. And by the way, not all appeals are, if you like, the kind that the tribunal would uphold, in that these would be cases of people who are pleading circumstances other than what is set out in the criteria of eligibility for these grants. But nonetheless, the tribunal will have to deal with those cases and dispense with them. But that, of course, the people who sit on these panels who are independent practitioners will have to be paid for the work that they have done. So the biggest challenge is that we actually don't as yet have enough resources to deal with the bulk of cases that we have to deal with. We still have a backlog which we are dealing with, but at the same time, we have new cases that are coming into the system. So different options are being explored to see the extent to which the backlog on the one hand can be dealt with, whilst at the same time we deal with new cases that come up. There is already a working relationship between this independent tribunal and SASA with regards to how they are going to process this, these cases. For an example, some of the cases that come to the tribunal relate to the fact that SASA has not given them reasons why the application has not been successful. And when a matter like that comes to the tribunal, it becomes difficult for the tribunal to entertain an appeal of that kind. Because you need to know why is it that SASA has not approved a grant. On appeal, you don't necessarily start hearing the matter from scratch. You deal with it on the basis of the reasons given for the decision not to grant, and then once you've assessed whether or not the reasons hold, you will make a decision. Now, what tends to happen is that a lot of queries go back to SASA to ask for reasons why is it that a grant application has not been approved. And that takes some time for SASA to respond to. Because we're talking about appeals that come from all over the country, throughout the nine provinces. So there are challenges relating to capacity, there are challenges relating to budget, there are system issues relating to how SASA has dealt with some of the applications for the grants. But as I say, there has been interaction between the tribunal and SASA, and they're looking into systems on how to improve this. One of the systems we have recommended to SASA, and I'm sure SASA will elaborate on this when they have the opportunity to interact with the committee, that when an application for a grant is turned down, there should be an automatic review process within SASA, meaning somebody else should have the opportunity to relook at that case before the outcome is finally communicated to an applicant. In that it is possible that the first officer who entertains an application may overlook certain facts and on that basis turn down an application. When in fact, if somebody else within SASA can look at that application, they might come to a different conclusion. So in so doing, you limit the number of cases that have to come to the tribunal on appeal. If you have an internal mechanism of verifying whether, in fact, a decision not to grant an application is properly supported by information before an officer of SASSA who is attending to the matter. So those are some of the challenges the tribunal is seized with. Of course, associated with these challenges is the fact that a number of people who have lodged their appeals or were unhappy about SASSA applications, I mean, decisions on their applications, are sometimes resorting to the courts to seek to have their appeals adjudicated upon within a short space of time. We've had a sizable number of cases in KZN which have been dealt with in the manner I've described. We are now ordered to set the matters down for adjudication within 60 days of receiving a notice of appeal from an unhappy original applicant for a grant. And one of there are really a sizable number of challenges. One of the challenges we face then is that ordinary people who don't necessarily understand how appeal processes work, all they do is write a letter to the independent tribunal indicating that they are unhappy about a decision that SASSA has made. But you find that the letter does not disclose the basis on which an appeal can in fact be entertained and resolved. So there's a lot of toing and froing between the tribunal and the person appealing to gather more information as to on what basis, why do you believe that your application ought to have succeeded at SASSA. So that information is then placed before the tribunal and people are able to deal with this. So we've now had an increased number of cases where appellants, instead of their matters being dealt with on the papers, you find that we have now many instances where people have to be invited to come to the tribunal to present their cases. And that has an additional budgetary burden in that you now have to get these panels traveling all over the country, being as close as possible to where people come from, for them to interact with the tribunal with a view to having their matter resolved. I know it's quite a long answer, but I'm trying to really piece together what I believe is a very huge challenge facing the independent tribunals. I'll now pass on to Dr. Mabetta to deal with matters relating to the welfare services.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, and the Deputy Minister. There were quite a number of questions on the welfare services side. If I've left any out, the Honorable Members will help me in that regard. The first question was on the implementation of the minimum standards and policy on residential facilities for people with disabilities, which was piloted in Eastern Cape. And I think the request, the question was, we wanted to know whether what is, you know, the status of this of the implementation of this minimum norms and standards. The pilot was finalized in Eastern Cape and evaluated in this financial year, and the implementation is now taking place in all the provinces. I think the question was why did we choose this specific province? Normally, when we decide on piloting, we consult with all the provinces, and the province that is willing to participate in the pilot normally is within first preference. Yeah. And then the register on elder abuse, there was a question with regard to the statistics, as when are we going to get the statistics for them to populate the register on elder abuse. We have already received
statistics from four provinces, which is Limpopo, Western Cape, KZN, and Free State. And other provinces are intending to send their statistics before the end of this month. I think what we needed, what we had to do in this financial year was first to develop the framework which will be used to collect the statistics. That has been done. People have been trained, and now the statistic is flowing in. And that statistic has also come from the Department of Justice and from other relevant departments like the police. How many children are benefiting from alternative care? We've got, honorable members, we've got 614 and 931,000 children in alternative care, almost 700 or 615,000 children in alternative care. 537,000 and 785,000 are in foster care. So it's got more than 530,000 children in foster care. 60,721 are in adoption, and then 13,885 children are in residential care. That makes the 614,931 children in alternative care. The question also, the honourable member also asked a question as how are these services on alternative care provided to children in the different provinces. Alternative care is a statutory service, so it's not a must. It has to be provided to all children in accordance to the Child Care Act of 1983, because we have not implemented the Children's Act as yet. The services are provided to children who have been found in need of care and protection through the Children's Court process. Once the child is found in need of care and protection, then the social worker consent or the province consent has to find an alternative care for that child if the court order requests that the child be put in alternative care. We know that why we have so many children is that mainly because of orphans. Most of the children who are in foster care, especially, are in foster care. So say 80% of those children are orphans, and they are being looked after by their relatives, mainly grandparents. The guidelines on foster care, we have drafted the guidelines last year. They were not; they were just drafted. And what we are doing in this current year, we're refining them through consultations with the provinces. And finally, they'll be approved. The intention is that when we implement the Children's Act next year in April, this guidelines will also be operationalized. The adoption, there was a question on adoption are we promoting adoption within the family extended system, because we are aware of the problem that children who are, mainly those who are in foster care, or especially fostered by grandparents, when the grandparents die, the children are left without any, they cannot claim any of the assets that belong to their grandparents, or even if it was aunt or whoever. So we are aware of the problems. Many people have been affected by this. Young people have been affected by this. We know that some of the children who are on the streets are children who are on foster care. So we have developed a strategy to promote adoption in South Africa. In fact, we've just completed that strategy. It has to go to the forum, the Heads of Social Development Forum, the DG Forum, together with the Heads of Social Development for approval before we can implement it. This strategy is really looking at cultural barriers,
yeah.
Mainly, and we intend to hold community dialogues and to sensitize various communities about adoption and looking really at what are the actual barriers. We know the actual barriers is that people are more keen to look after the children than adopt them. The issue of changing surnames and But the Children's Act is also assisting that now if you adopt a child, you don't need to change the surname of the child. And the Children's Act also seeks to shorten the process. Currently with the Child Care Act, the provinces are not fully involved in adoption, but when we implement the Act, they'll be more involved. And we intend to train as many social workers as possible who will be dealing with the adoption. We have also a media drive, and we intend to interface with various organizations, including churches, in popularizing adoptions in South Africa. What we need to do, in fact, before we can even start with the media drive and popularization, we need to have a database of all adoptable children. It means we must, all the children that are being assessed, we must be able to identify those that are adoptable and put them on a database so that when we get the parents, the adoptive parents, prospective adoptive parents are screened and put on a database, we'll be able to match. And I spoke about the training because we cannot do this without the training people will be dealing with all this, with the incoming of the people need to be screened. There was a question on when does the department intend rolling out services and correctional services. In the last financial year we realized that children were awaiting trial in correctional services. We're just sitting there doing absolutely nothing. Yeah. So we started with a pilot of Kulisa in six correctional services. Currently, we are evaluating that pilot, and the intention is to roll it out. Of course, it's rolling out depends upon the provincial departments. They need to budget for it so that to be able to implement the program. It's a very good program, but ideally, we should not have children in correctional services. Children who are awaiting trial really belong to secure care facilities that are run by the Department of Social Development and home-based supervision. But there are certain category of children that have committed such serious crimes that have to await trial. In especially those who've committed very serious crimes like rape, murder, with others who are also arrested and awaiting trial in prison. It's unfortunate that this situation has to await trial in prison. And the Department of Social Development is also responsible for the implementation of the Child Justice Act, which is also going to be operationalized next year in April. The Child Justice Act really deals mainly with services to children, those who are awaiting trial, like diversion programs. So our focus at the moment is on the development or strengthening of diversion programs, funding NGOs that deliver these services. And I think through that process, we also ensure that the children who are in prison have access to such services. There was also a question related to social crime prevention, a question on the training of probation officers, that what was the outcome of that training. We trained 308 assistant probation officers. The intention that after training, they will be registered as social auxiliary workers by the Council for Social Service Professions. That process is still in that process of trying to register them, and because we need to have a register, they are registered, and then get them registered. Most of them are young people. They are now supporting. They are being placed, and they are working. They are supporting probation officers, because we've got very few probation officers in the country. So with the assistant probation officers, the load of work of probation officers has been greatly reduced, and they are able to manage all the cases, because probation officers are social workers basically, and they take probation officers as a specialty. But we, with the shortage of social workers, we've experienced the shortage of probation officers in the country. And for us to be ready to implement the Child Justice Act in full, we need to have as many assistant probation officers and probation officers as many as possible. I think those are the main questions. I don't know whether I've left out any.
Madam Chair, if I might just add a little bit on the issues relating to adoption. That the Children's Act, the new one, has in fact made it easier for people without means. Originally, the law required that a person seeking to adopt should demonstrate the fact that they have the means, meaning that only people who are wealthy were able to adopt. But that requirement has since been removed, which means that even poor people can now in fact adopt, and that will create the possibility for many people in the rural areas especially to be in a position to adopt. But our call for the processes to be shortened should be counterbalanced by the need to always be guided by what is in the best interest of the child. And that requires us to take certain steps, which means that it can be a case of a person walking into court today and walking out with an adoption order. We need to accept the fact that there are certain processes that need to be undertaken. Social workers need to do certain pieces of work to make sure that the court, upon granting adoption, must be satisfied that it is in the best interest of that child for them to be placed with that person as their new adoptive parent. So I thought I should just emphasize that point, Madam Chair, that however much we want the processes to be fast, we still need to be guided by the fact that the best interest of the child must remain uppermost in our mind. The expression of eight orphans was used to describe children whose parents may have died as a result of AIDS. I'm told that that kind of labeling is not to be encouraged, in that children are orphans, irrespective of what the cause of death of their parents may be. So I thought I should just mention that as an aside. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further questions? Okay, Deputy Minister, before you
begin. Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable member of the NCOP, I think I'll just touch on general issues. Like the first issue which raises emotions is the issue of accrued at pension payout points. And it's regrettable that older persons continue to die in queues. But I think we should also appreciate that the number of people that are dying has in queues is reducing. It has gone down considerably. There is one other issue that was raised in our last meeting, which is very important. That whilst we are busy trying to ensure that older persons don't go to queues, don't stand in queues for a long time, we should take it into consideration. Actually, it was raised by the DG, and it makes a lot of sense, because most older persons, if you say to them they must go to the bank, they refuse, because they entertain themselves, they interact with their friends there. And so it means we still have a challenge of ensuring that we close that gap, because if they are at home, we keep them indoors, they don't have time to interact. So that's another challenge that we've identified. And also, even if they go to banks, if they get their money from the bank, you'll find out that they go on the same day. Even if they are allowed to go on different days, they go one day when they know that their money is there, they go there, which also makes it difficult for bankers to to deal with the situation. And we should also keep it in our minds that banks' interest is different from ours, which also says that we have to try and create a good relationship with them, negotiate with them, and see what they can do. But what is important is for us as citizens of South Africa to ensure that we talk to older persons and ask them to go on different days to banks to get their pension. And Mr. Jehoma has touched on the new processes that we are trying to introduce so as to ensure that at least 70% of the people get their monies from either the post office and other financial institutions, and then 30% from the other service providers, because you still have a very far remote rural areas that would not instantly get their pensions from the banks. Also, with the issue of adoption, I agree that we are gradually losing Ubuntu because, firstly, the minister in the past few months has been strongly advocating for the adoption of children, because most of the children are fostered, and foster care goes up to the age of 18, and adoption, it goes beyond that. But over and above that, there are issues that we have to take into consideration, the right of the child, whilst we are trying to ensure that we deal with the processes of adoption. Fast-tracking the processes of adoption, we should take the right of the child into consideration. There are many challenges that we are facing all over the world, like the issue of child trafficking. It would be a sad day when we fast-track the process of adoption and we find out that the children that we are fast-tracking are being trafficked. So we need to take care of that and ensure that we protect our children. And I also want to touch on the issue of the middle class and the elite. I wonder how many of us here have adopted children. Because foster care is done by ordinary poor people. And some of us usually say these people are looking for money, and I totally disagree with that, because looking after a child means caring, loving, developing a human being. It means a lot. So the amount of money these people get is too little for us to attribute it to greediness. And then you look at the elite, the middle class, they don't want to adopt. But also what we found out during the time when the minister was talking about adoption is that some people just want to pay those who want to adopt. They don't want to adopt children. Others want to contribute whilst the child is staying with a parent, which is a good thing, because even if you contribute towards the development of the child, you don't want to remove her from the parents, because other children have adopted because of the status of the family. So or you don't want to be removed from the next of kin. So I also thought I should raise that and say we also have a responsibility to talk to our communities and show them the importance of adopting children, because I think that's very important. The conditions in the Northwest, at least we know about those conditions. And we got a report from one of the committee members who resides in National Assembly committee members who reside in the Northwest about the conditions in the Northwest, and I think the department is making a follow up on that. But one other thing that we don't know how we're going to control is saying to our people, don't come to the pension payout point before 5 o'clock. others come at 3 o'clock in the morning. And by the time you open the offices, they are there, and there is nothing you can do. You need to try and deal with their challenges. And we've also agreed to the fact that in some of the provinces, SASSA and Social Development are sharing offices, which makes the conditions unbearable, not for pension or for the recipients of pensions only, but also for the staff. Because you find out that they are squeezed in one office, there is lack of privacy, people have to raise or talk about their personal things in that condition. And the department is trying to address the matter of offices in various provinces. The issue of lack of competency, I think what we are doing as the department is to train our people to deal with their work or to face the challenges at work. And then thereafter, maybe the issues of labor relations can come in, because generally the issue of labor has labor laws. So you can't just deal with them indiscriminately. If a person is not competent, you need to train that person, and then thereafter you can take action. Because that contributes to disjointed systems. If one person loses one word in a form, it disorganizes the whole process of application. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks very much, Minister. I will allow for the second round of questions for all members. Member Faba, Member Mokate Mnuze, and Member Chibilia. Yeah.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm not going to ask a question. It's just something about what I would like to just state correctly with the DJ, and then I would also ask just to please, if I could be excused just afterwards. Mr. DJ, as I said, when I used the term eight orphans, HIV orphans, it was not to degrade or to make it sound bad. It's just that the reality of statistics that we have is that the percentage of children that's left alone in the world is unfortunately a hell of a big loss, and the main reason is because of HIV, which we can't wish away. But yes, I do concur with you that we should not label people. It was not the idea to do that. But it is unfortunately a reality that we have to live for, that this is happening to our community. Thank you, Mr. Dici.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know whether it's going to be a question or comment, but firstly, I just want to indicate that we are aware that we do have lack of social workers, which is a challenge. When we talk about the issue of foster care, the problem, most of the problems that are reported that come to my constituency office, is the issue where you find that communities being requested, you know, maybe to take a child, which they do appreciate, but after that, the social worker will not even come to visit and take, or maybe the child to get the grant. Those are most of the cases that I got in my office. I think that it's something which is of a concern, because it really demoralizes our community members. The second point is the issue of probation officers, which personally I feel that we are not doing enough to make our people aware, or to make people aware of using this probation officer. If you look at what's happening, then you find, I don't want to be dismissive, but this is the reality, that you find white people are the most ones who are using the probation officer. If I have to give a practical example again, we once had a case in Lichtenberg where I interacted with the magistrate when I checked with him, actually what is happening,
then you know his concern was that our people are not aware and not using this provision for sisters. And maybe the other opportunity that I had is because I was with the Correctional Services Committee, where we also find that we've got a lot of children in prison, and because of lack of probation officers also it contributes a lot. Lastly, I just want to talk to any child who develops it. The last time when we interacted, there was a concern around register of the site, particularly the community site. I just want to check how far is the department, or how is the department intending to improve around registering this community site? Because if they're not registered, you can't even monitor whether the standard of that community center is it up to standard. Are the children really, the atmosphere there is conducive? Which was one of the matter which was also raised when during our provincial week in the Northwest from social development, that they don't even have data. It's very difficult for them just to indicate how many community centers do we have. You know, I just want to check, maybe departments will just give us how far are they regarding that matter.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Now, I just want to make cross-referencing on what the Deputy Minister is saying about the reluctancy of our elderly to open bank accounts because of social networking. I was in a public meeting on Sunday, and there's one ward where the metro has decided to change the addresses, house numbers, and the streets. And the elderly there were saying they're not agreeing with the changing of the house numbers, because even the ancestors who died in that house would get lost now when they see they died 10875 Javlani, now they see 2013 whatever. So I'm saying it's there. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, mine is just something that disturbs me, coming from areas that are very rural, concerning the let me say terminally ill people that are receiving disability grants. We appreciate that they do receive this temporary disability grant. But there's something that we seem to have overlooked as a department, in that some of these people cannot take themselves to the pay point, and being very sick, you find them lying down in the sun, and they've got to be carried just to go and print their finger there. You know, and this person is sick. That worries me. The other thing is, from home up to the point itself, they have to pay for a particular transport. So already, that money is halved. So I'm not sure if there is anything that is being done. We consider the health of the person among the other people, and also, you know, those conditions are not really okay for me, as I've been observing and having people close to me undergoing that experience. I'm not sure if we have been trying to look into it and see how we can assist, especially those that are on temporary disability and are maybe infected with HIV and AIDS. It's terrible when you find them in those pay point stations. Thank you.
Member Roshamay.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, I don't know, because the DG earlier on indicated that most of the questions are for that. Now, I'm very much reluctant also to continue to ask questions. Because when I'm looking under the unspending, millions of millions of dollars have been unspent, and while our people outside there are suffering, and I must make this point, Honorable Chair, that in all departments, both national, provincial, officials will never go to community meetings and speak. It's us who are speaking in those meetings. And a question arises from those meetings. Now, I don't know. I'm just stuck because I've got a lot of questions that I want to ask. In relation to the unspent funds.
Why don't you ask your questions? Let's hear them.
Hear the DG.
Let's hear your questions.
Yeah, maybe my question, let it be Chairperson, direct to the DG, that in terms of with millions of rents being unspent, what is your
the link to that before you answer the DG is on the community development unspent funds, which is 2.1 million rand. The measures that are put in place to ensure that this money is spent. And also there's a question on program 3, on the minimum quality of services to older persons, where on the actual output it talks of the pilot that could not be conducted. There were two pilot areas identified in Kandla and Calvinia. What I want to know here, when will this pilot project resume again for its implementation? Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I take it that the Honourable Member's question relates to monies that were allocated for social grants, which have not been spent. Okay. There's very unfortunate balance in the public service with regard to what can be regarded as under expenditure and what one could argue to be saving. When money is allocated for social grants, it is based on certain projections of the numbers of people who will qualify for certain types of grants, based on the population size and the level of poverty in the various provinces. In a sense, budgeting is done on that basis, but at the same time, you will find that both the Department of South and SASA are charged with the responsibility of making sure that we increasingly improve on the integrity of the social grant system. And part of the integrity improvement includes the fact that certain grant types have to be reviewed at different intervals. For an example, your temporary disabilities have to be reviewed every 6 months. You'll find that in the past, people were on temporary disability but continued to get the grant for a period in excess of 6 months. Now, when you introduce integrity measures that make sure that that grant must terminate in 6 months, what you end up with at the end of the financial year is that money that would otherwise have been paid to people who are supposed to be terminated has in fact been held back and saved. The only difficulty perhaps with how the system works is that you cannot divert that money into other areas of need. You have to take the money back to the Treasury and the Treasury will reallocate it. And what you see in our books is that we have underspent, and we would say, no, we have not underspent. We have saved because we have in fact introduced measures that improve on our integrity, that improve on our efficiency on the system. I'm just giving the Chamber of Disability as an example, but there are a range of other grants where we have seen significant improvements on the part of SASA in how they have implemented the requirements that are in fact in the policy on this. So that would be my specific response to that. But may I also say, Madam Chair, that I think I may have sent a wrong message. Perhaps the committee should feel free to ask any question. And we will interact with the question to the best of our ability. Where we are able to provide a general response, we will do so. Where we are unable, we would say, this is what we know, but we think the details will be provided later. And sometimes if we're not able to provide the committee with details now, we can go back and provide you with a written response to the question. We will do the consultation with SASA to get the detail and send a written response to members of the committee. So I thought perhaps I should encourage members of the committee to feel free to ask whatever questions. Right. Dr. Khanaka will deal with the community development one, and Dr. Mabeta with the minimum quality issues relating to older persons. One for you, Mr. Chaloma. Do you want to deal with that first? Because it may be linked to...
Yeah. Just briefly, in reference to the question relating to people whose health condition may be such that it is difficult for them to get to papers, especially people with disabilities already, as well as potential incurring of additional costs to collect their benefits. The law, at least the Social Assistance Act and the regulations, make provision for a procurator to be appointed when a person can't, on a regular basis, collect it. In which case, the procurator can get the money either into his or her bank account and then hand it over to the beneficiary. In the past, of course, the appointment of procurators has created serious problems where people feel they now don't want a family member anymore to be a procurator. Mm-hmm. To that extent, again, the regulations provide extensive detail on how to have a procurator appointed. What's the word? Not quite like setting or firing the person, but essentially changing that person. So that is one means that is provided for in law. Regrettably, of course, when a person's condition, health condition changes suddenly, and then he or she now does not have the choice of a procurator, the benefit really is kept in abeyance till that person is able to. But again, a social worker can be called upon to visit and verify the person's condition and help the person in his or her access to the disability benefit.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. I will first respond to the question relating to the unspent funds on community development. These are funds that were supposed to be transferred to organizations, NAFWA and National Religious Leaders Forum. The amount, there was a delay in the transfer of funds because the two organizations were not ready with the business plans. And before we could transfer any funds, we have to make sure that the business plans talk to the objectives and are in a way that we'll be able to monitor this organization. So programs have to be put in place. And this organization, we took a lot of time to be able to get them to get the business plans in order. But the processes have been finalized, and these amounts were transferred late in the last financial year. There was also a question with respect to the terminally ill that receive disability grants and they experience hardships.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the department considers as part of the home community-based care program to give a comprehensive care and support to people living with chronic illness.
Linked to, the, to that is also to offer the kind of psychosocial support that these people need. So currently we have recognized this need. We have developed guidelines for caregivers to be able to offer the kind of psychosocial support which would be more comprehensive than just being responsible for caregiving in the home and just identification of orphans. So that is going to be more comprehensive to also include this kind of support that you are talking about, including even the kind of treatment support. We are not responsible for treatment, but we think social development can offer that psychosocial support for those people who are affected by HIV and AIDS living in the home. So that should be given to the elderly as well, as they are also suffering from the kind of chronic illnesses that need the support for them to go to the pain point. So we hope that that will be implemented readily in the next financial year once the guidelines are approved.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think there are a number of questions that were asked. I'll start with the one on the pilot in KZN on the non-sustenance for older persons. Why it didn't take place last year? Because all the preparations for the pilot could not take place last year, but in this financial year, the pilot is being undertaken. So it's underway, and I think it will soon be completed for evaluation for the rollout to other provinces. With regard to the probation officers, that there's lack of community awareness regarding the role of probation officers in community. I think that is true, because with the fewer probation officers that we have currently, their focus is more on the arrested children, on the assessment of arrested children to ensure proper placement of those children and their supervision. But the department is developing a social crime prevention strategy. Once it's implemented, we'll have some of the officials, the social service professionals in social development, implementing that social crime prevention, especially amongst the young people, to divert them from, you know, to ensure that those that are at risk of committing crime, to make sure that they are diverted through, you know, programs in the community, that do specialized skills programs in at the community level. With the ECD registration, I'm surprised to hear that we are very slow, because there's been an intention in the past 3 years, I think, to register as many sites as possible at community level. This is a program that is linked to the EPWP. The drive was to register ECD sites so that teachers, the ECD practitioners working in those sites could be trained and to offer good quality ECD program or services in those sites. But what we have requested or agreed with the provinces is that they should have a database of all registered sites, which they have, and to have a database of their unregistered sites, so that this will facilitate the registration of the unregistered sites. Registration of ECD sites is quite tricky, and is a laborious exercise, and it has to be done on a continuous basis. Every 2 years, the ECD site must be registered. Why we register ECD sites? I think that's the question we need to ask. It's not only for the children to receive a subsidy, but to ensure that the ECD sites, they comply with the norms and standards. And we find that most of the ECD sites, people have just put up a building with whatever type of material they have and got children together, and they don't adhere to the norms and standards. First, we have to register them provisionally and provide them with support so that they can have full registration. The slow process also
is because we in the past we relied on the registration of the ECD sites by social workers only. But now we have realized that in fact the law allows us to use other social service professions. So we use auxiliary, social auxiliary workers, we use other trained personnel to register, but under the supervision of the social worker. Because if something goes wrong in the ECD site, if the social development, if a child dies in an ECD site, the inquiry comes to us that you've registered this site, but under these conditions, why did you register it? So we have to be very careful to ensure that children will get good care and good services when registered, when they are in those sites. Okay, I just wanted to say, you know, to prove that I think we have really improved on the registration in the past. From the past, in 2004 we've got we had 5,000 registered sites, but now we have 13,736 sites registered by the department.
Honorable Civilians, are you still on? And Honorable Mahat?
Yes, listen, I'm actually interested in the costing of the Children's Act. Did the department already do that? Because when this act is implemented, there will be a lot of other things which will influence all the different provinces. That is my question. And then the other one, I don't want to labor this meeting, but the other one is I pick up in the document that there is some problems around the monitoring and evaluation of spending the money in the department. On page, I don't have the page here, but the department experienced financial crises in the last few months, which affected service delivery. Why didn't the department detect that problem earlier when they find actually afterwards up some financial problems in the department? Is it due to the monitoring and evaluation system in the financial department or what?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to talk to the issue because I've tried to be specific. We've got three types of websites, of which I think the member will agree with. We've got the ones for the schools, the private sector, and that is why I was very specific that even when we interacted with them at the provincial level, the concern was around the community side. Which they couldn't even provide us with the data. With private sector, private side, they don't have problems with that. Around school, they don't have problems. But the problem is with the community side. That is why I just wanted to check. How are you trying to improve that? Because there are these centers which are much lonely and which doesn't even comply with the norms and standards of the internet. I just wanted to clarify that because I was very specific around the issue of the community side.
Okay, Miriam.
Yeah, mine is just a request in that going around working with communities, these home-based care centers, mostly we find women there. There are very few, actually men, are invisible in those centers. I don't know how we can be able to attract men into these home-based centers, because in the rural areas there, an old man who is very sick cannot be touched by a woman. I know our traditions do not allow such. So I don't know what can we do to attract these men to come and assist in this home-based care, because we do have men patients. But very few. I'm not sure how we are going to do it. Let the department think of something to attract the men there. Thank you.
Yes, over to you. Yeah.
Thank you very much. The I think I understand, you know, the concern of the member with regard to community sites. What we will ask the provinces to do is to disaggregate their information. Already the deputy minister has said in this financial year we must in fact focus on the sites that are in the rural areas, because those are the ones that are neglected. Those are the ones that don't come forward and they don't know the process of the registration. We take note of that and we will ensure that the provinces, you know, provide this information. They have that information all the time. At the moment, their information, their database is quite mixed up. So they don't know which sites are community sites, which ones are private. Okay. The question of the Children's Act. The Children's Act was concept in 2006, and so what we are doing at the moment is we are working with the provinces for the implementation of the Act in next financial year, just to make sure that they are ready and to look at the implementation percent. What is it that they'll be ready to implement in the Act? We're not really talking about progressive implementation, but we need to look at the programs that they can manage at the moment when the Act is put in place. I think the honourable members must remember that the Children's Act is an improvement of the Child Care Act, the current Child Care Act, which has been implemented. It's not a new legislation altogether. It's just an improvement. So the provinces need to look at those programs that talk to the improvement of the Children's Act, and we are doing that currently. We are looking at those implementation plans.
Okay, if we have to close now. Members,
Good.
Yeah.
Please.
If there are no more responses from the side of the department, I think. All right.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think it relates basically to, I think the question was the reason lack of monitoring in terms of finances, because of the fact that there are financial crises experienced. I think it relates basically to an general increase in your tariffs and costs. And there is a general decrease in the funding also. So your needs become much more. So you need to constantly weigh what you can afford and what you can't afford. And there is sometimes unforeseen expenditure with regard to critical projects that need to be implemented, that you need to reprioritize to stay within your budget. The monitoring system is a financial monitoring system is basically based on the government's financial management system. We are continuously introducing additional, we call it non-financial spreadsheets to assist us in keeping track of these things. There are constant meetings, management meetings, where we keep these things into consideration. So it's basically just a total pressure in terms of inflation-related increases in tariffs and so forth. Thank you very much.
Okay. Yeah, let me allow the Deputy Minister before I close to say something, if you have anything. You are not compelled.
Okay. Thank you very much for giving us this opportunity. And I think we had a good engagement. And I also wish to say we are committed to working positively with the committee, and that as the DG has recommended, I would recommend that you call the agencies so that you can get the actual information on some of the issues. And yeah, and I think it has been practiced, and we are used to that. And if you need the whole of the department, it would also be good for us to be notified on time. But also, we should know that if it's the whole department, we must be given the whole day. Because what happened, what I've seen before, is that we end up with the work of the department only and not get into agencies. And it ends up being a what do you call it?
wasteful expenditure. So it would be good if we have a good, a well-planned a program.
Okay.
And thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. We will, when the agencies come to account, we accompany them.
Oh.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks very much, Deputy Minister. Yeah, yeah, let me also take this opportunity to say that we will definitely, as a committee, pay some visit in some of your sites in trying to do our oversight. So what we are intending to do as a committee is to visit some of the pay points. It's just let me focus on the issues that we also secure care centers. We'll be visiting some of your secure care centers. We'll be visiting some of your old age homes. We'll be visiting some of your child abuse centers around the country. But we will inform the department that it should know when we go to provinces, which province we will identify, and at what stage, so that you are aware of our visit to those areas. We will also invite the staff, of course. We'll invite the NTA and some of your agencies that are linked to the department. And lastly, I would request that the department furnish us with the procedures or steps that we have as far as the steps that need to be followed in establishing or in preparing for a site for registration, the ECDs that we're talking about, those sites. So that when we do our oversight, we go to provinces, at least we're able to, on that spot, be able to assist those people who are struggling to get their sites to be well established, and they must know where to go to get assistance. That information will help us a lot, because we do that frequently with the communities. Yes. And let me also, on behalf of the committee, thank the department very much. We are led by the Deputy Minister for visiting us and sharing with the committee this very important information. And the interaction was very useful and lively and vibrant. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Happy Christmas. You are saying happy Christmas?
Committee members, remain. 5 minutes, committee members.
Committee members, wait inside for 5 minutes.
Yeah. I'm going to go to the hospital.